Welcome, everybody. I'm delighted to have you join us on this session on sugar-sweetened beverages. We're going to talk today about science on sugar-sweetened beverages. The release of a new marketing report on the beverages will come out at this meeting, and there will be discussion of public policy. So my name is Kelly Brownell. I'm the director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at Yale University, and I'll be chairing this session. I'm going to make some brief introductory remarks and then turn it over to the other guests that we have here. The obligatory disclosure thing: I have no relationships to disclose. How sad a life is that? I'd like to begin with this quote from Nelson Mandela. There can be no keener revelation of a society's soul than the way in which it treats its children. There's several arresting realities regarding modern children. Well, first, most would agree that our future depends on them. I think it's also fair to say that our children are being robbed of their future. Everybody in the room has heard the startling statistic that this may be the first generation in the nation's history to lead shorter lives than their parents did. It's really a pretty amazing statistic, given that there are life-saving advances in medicine all the time. And I think it's fair to say that there are responsible players for this. It's easy to diffuse responsibility by saying there are many, many things involved in contributing to obesity, which is obviously true. At the very core, you've got physical activity and the dietary part of it. And then within the dietary picture, you have a lot of different contributors. But that doesn't mean that some players might be more responsible than others, and there might be some logical places to begin with public health policy. So the question is, can a special case be made for sugar-sweetened beverages? Is this a category of food that deserves special attention in the public policy arena? And that's what we'll be talking about today. Certainly it's true that the beverage landscape has changed a lot. What was once just a few flagship beverages like Coke and Pepsi and 7-Up has become entire new categories of beverages like the energy drinks, sports drinks, sweetened teas, vitamin waters, and the like. So the landscape has become much more complex, and the marketing of these beverages has become more sophisticated. So the one question is, why pick on sugar-sweetened beverages when a lot of other factors are involved in obesity? And our guests here today, our speakers, will talk about this and lay out the case. But just a few of the reasons that often get cited for why this is a special category. One, these beverages are the single greatest source of added sugar in the American diet. They're completely empty calories, free of nutrition at all. Even a Twinkie or a Frito has some nutrition. These have none at all. David, will you be talking about the poor calorie compensation in your talk? Okay, good. Then I won't mention that further, but it's an extremely interesting and important part of the picture. New research showing that sugar can act on the brain like a typical substance of abuse. There are good animal studies on this, human imaging studies and the like. There's the known addition of a known addictive substance, caffeine, sometimes in extreme amounts. Targeting the vulnerable populations, you'll see that especially when the marketing report is presented. And at least in my mind, there's rock-solid proof of harm. That is, links between sugar beverage consumption, obesity, diabetes, and other problems. And David will talk about this in some detail. If we look at beverage trends over the years, milk consumption and soft drink consumption were quite a bit different in the 1970s, with milk consumption much higher. But over the years, the lines crossed. In the mid-1990s, both adults and children in the U.S. were consuming more sugar-sweetened beverages than they were milk. A very interesting study done by researchers at the NIH showing that in children ages 2 to 18, 40% of all their calories are empty calories, and that the largest contributor to this are sugar-sweetened beverages. This is not true just in the U.S. My colleague working with me, Nicole Novak, has just analyzed data on consumption trends in Latin American countries. And in Peru, you'll see the trends here, the top two lines being sugar-sweetened beverages and milk, and you see those two lines have diverged quite a lot over the years, trends very similar to the U.S. Here are consumption data from Mexico. The top two lines, again, are sugar-sweetened beverages and milk. And you'll see that the lines cross much like they did in the U.S. So this is a global issue, not just an issue confined to the United States. If we look at soft drink consumption by country, looking at the United States and Latin American countries, you see that Brazil is close to the U.S., Chile is exactly the same as the U.S., and consumption in Mexico is even higher than it is in the U.S. not surprising that health authorities in these countries are serious about considering public policies related to the reduction in these. The average American now consumes 50 gallons a year of sugar-sweetened beverages. Considering that many people are consuming none, you can see how startling a statistic this is. There's a long list of organizations that have called for reductions in sugar-sweetened beverages, and other than the WHO listed here, this is just organizations in the United States. One can see campaigns all around the country, pioneered by New York City, and Lynn Silver will be talking about that, but spreading to many other parts of the country. A great number of cities and states now have launched campaigns on reducing sugar-sweetened beverage intake, not only educational campaigns to convince people that these are not good to be consuming in such large amounts, but also campaigns, for example, in Boston and Cleveland, where the mayors have proposed not allowing these products to be sold in municipal premises. One of the principal efforts by the Centers for Disease Control is to reduce sugar-sweetened beverage in its obesity strategy. So the agenda for today will be to take the science and put it in context and talk about the biological and health effects of the sugar-sweetened beverages to see whether it makes sense for all these campaigns to be occurring or whether it makes sense to do even more than what is occurring now with aggressive strategies such as limiting marketing or using taxes on the sugared beverages. We'll talk about how parents perceive these beverages, how children perceive them, and what messages are being used to sell them. We'll talk about the types of marketing, the amounts of marketing, and whether it's being targeted at certain segments of the population. We'll talk about legal opportunities to address the issue and public policy opportunities. What you'll see presented here by Marlene Schwartz and Jennifer Pomerantz is the release of the third of three reports done by the Rudd Center, funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and also the Rudd Foundation. 3 years ago, we released our report on sugared cereal or breakfast cereal consumption in children and essentially found that the industry was taking its products with the worst nutrition scores and marketing them most aggressively to children. That was followed by a report on fast food, where an industry that was saying it was marketing less to children was actually marketing more, and the amount of messaging that children and teenagers were receiving on fast food marketing was really quite remarkable. So some of the questions that we hope to address today: are the sugar-sweetened beverages especially bad actors on the public health scene? Is there anything special about them that makes them a category of food worth special or maybe first attention? Is industry self-regulation working? Must marketing change? What is the role of government and the courts in this? And here are our speakers. So I won't introduce them as we go along, but David Ludwig from Children's Hospital Boston, Harvard Medical School, done tremendously good research on sugar-sweetened beverages. My colleague Marlene Schwartz, Deputy Director of the Rudd Center. Jennifer Harris, Director of Marketing Initiatives at the Rudd Center. Jennifer Pomerantz, who's the Director of Legal Initiatives at the Rudd Center. And then Lynn Silver was kind enough to join us from the New York City Department of Health, and all of you will know about the good work done by folks there.